If the neighbors were to notice that the owner of the residence known colloquially as the Mushroom House hadn't left his house in several weeks, they would be alarmed. But they are not alarmed at all, because they don't exist. There are no neighbors in this neighborhood of Love Canal. They evacuated a long time ago. The Mushroom House's lonely inhabitant is the only one who stayed behind. He didn't believe that toxic waste was a problem. But he believes now. In the weeks since we last left the king, he's been held hostage in his own home by a gelatinous toxic life form. You should see the place. The toxic waste has taken over, outfitting the place in the finest synthetic decor. Plush, fainting couches, crushed polyester curtains, surrounded by a jungle of mushrooms, silver and gold, accent large swaths of filth spots. The waste lavishes the homeowner with gifts and hot meals, the promise of the chemical age made good. Chemicals can provide you with anything. But at what cost? And who's to say the chemicals won't evolve into a shape-shifting living entity who falls in love with you and won't let you out of its sight? Sometimes the chemical mass would take the shape of a pig or packing tape. Other times, a teratoma of hair and teeth. But things got weird the night that the toxic waste turned itself into a malformed MILF of his dreams and asked the king of the Mushroom House to marry it. Every attempt to escape the house had hitherto been thwarted, but these were desperate times. The marriage must not be consummated. The marriage, though, that could be the Mushroom King's way out. He remembered an old fairy tale he read as a child, The Turnip and the Scamp, where a turnip comes to life through means that are nobody else's business and imprisons the scamp in a tree as its love hostage. The scamp tricked the turnip into letting him go by promising to go shopping for the turnip's wedding dress. Could this possibly work against the toxic waste? Could he avoid the scamp's eventual fate at the end of the fairy tale when he is eaten by a bear?
Hi, this is Dr. Clint returning your call. Yeah, it is possible to mate with a sentient assemblage of toxic waste, but not without risks. In its ecstasy, it will become completely formless and suffocate its mate in its slime. Nobody I know personally has survived a toxic coupling. You will die. See ya.
The Mushroom King cozies up to his gelatinous lover and coos into its ear and runs his hand up and down indefinite curves. My darling, the anticipation is too much to bear. I'm jello for your slime. I want to give you the wedding of your dreams. But first, you'll need to let me leave so I can buy your wedding dress. The poisonous waste knows that it can't go dress shopping on its own. It had only left the house on one occasion, to get batteries at the Dollar Tree, where it wouldn't be noticed. So it worked. The hostage-taking ooze finally allowed the Mushroom King to leave.
Hurry back to me, my love.
And the front door of the house opened, seemingly of its own volition. The Mushroom King wasted no time running for the exit. But as he stepped through the door, he realized that the entire house had sunk underground into the Love Canal. Before him is only one path, the Underground Canal, now a subterranean passage buttressed by barrels and barrels of toxic waste buried long ago. He made a break for it anyways, heading down the underground tunnel, doing his best impression of running. There were all sorts of monstrosities down there, hatched from the barrels of chemical waste. He was chased by one-legged spiders and dogs with cat heads and bodies. He crawled his way through a pile of Tupperware and Chinese food. Exhausted, he tried to rest against the wall, but he slipped straight up it. Everything turned upside down. He was somehow shooting up a hole instead of down one. It was all wet and sloppy, a water slide sucking him upward towards a small light at the end. The sucking pressure was too much, and he passed out and vomited. When you hear a sound as if it has always been playing.
When you hear a sound as if it has always been playing.
When you hear a sound as if it has always been playing. That was the feeling he had while waking up. The water was rushing, hurrying, galloping over the edges of the world, filling every crack and crevice. But the water was also speaking to him, saying, "I'm going to flood the world, and there has never been a time when I was not rushing." And he remembered the one time he went to the falls, when he was in one of his poetic fits, and went to make out with a girl he had just drawn, back when he was drawing elaborate fantasy women on homemade paper, and then running to where he could hear water rushing. The sound would bring them to life, and then he would kiss their line-drawn mouths sweetly, deforming the paper with saliva. He associated rushing water with the overwhelming and instantaneous passage of time. Time collected in massive, wet slabs of peat earth, cut by an industrial saw, and shoved sloppily over an embankment of caged boulders, slapping the water with a gross thud. Sweet kisses and engorged carpets and rushing toilets, and always a pulse of knowing slime coating his hands and face. The wet pulse of a satisfying sack hanging just beyond his face, full of all his hopes and dreams. Was he just passed out on the bathroom floor, forced to rebuild his personality from scratch?
Or was he the house now?
Or was he the house now? And had the bathroom drank too much scooch juice and passed out upon him in the room where his face was? Was his face room the resting place for this plucky young toilet, full of hopes and dreams and ambitions to go out there and make something of itself in some fancy bathroom in the good part of town? No. With the water, he was traveling.
Full of hopes and dreams.
At first, he thought he was reconstructing himself from oblivion, but instead, he was being flung through the universe with unknowable speed and force.
There was that ever-drowning pulse again.
And there was the water rushing, the walls of his chamber. That was functionally a toilet.
Then he was rising up, lifted as if by a limp hand, and raw with wetness, he found his mind turned inside out and also inverted isometrically, and he was suddenly on the bathroom floor after struggling out of the toilet.
He lay there, coming all the way back from mundanely becoming one with the universe and all things, and heard an ice cream truck outside. How long had it been? Was this really happening? To possibly see someone in this neighborhood and to purchase an unsullied ice cream cone from them. He heard a child squeal, and now he noticed that the former disrepair of his bathroom had been wiped away, and the room was clean, the appliances new, and they were strange appliances. They were blocky, made of metal. He arched his back to look behind him at the door. He didn't recognize it. It, too, was spotless. He was heavy with water-soaked clothes. He struggled to his feet and hobbled through the door and down the stairs, the house also unrecognizable and spotless, his weak limbs squelching mossy water around the new paint and shiny furniture.
More voices. He opened the front door.
It was afternoon. In the summer, the neighborhood was no longer blighted. Each house sat robustly on its plot, shining white and contoured sharply against a blue sky, a whole line of similar houses, both sides of the small street. Further rows of houses peek out from the branching streets ahead. A few children gathered at an ice cream truck parked two houses up from his house. He blinked in the afternoon light. A man in a suit and fedora, who was obviously some sort of neighbor, lingered near the truck, keeping a watchful eye out for the children, The lord of the Mushroom House heaved his chest to catch his breath and locked eyes with this man, and this man gave him a little nod. The nod said,
"It's a nice summer day in a nice neighborhood we have here. I'm thankful. You?"
These people were all going to die. Don't they know about the poison land, the poison in the water, and the poisonous air? Don't they feel the radioactivity? "No, stop. You must flee. Run from this place," he said loudly and in a stilted manner. His voice and word choices were all coming out of him in a jagged, awkward lurch. Some kid eating a Good Humor ice cream sucker looked over at him and held out his tongue. No one else reacted, although the lingering man held up one eyebrow. "Hey now, things aren't so bad. Look at the sunset," said the eyebrow. This man was an expert communicator. "A sunset on poisonous lands," he heard himself say loudly. "That really didn't sound like me. Who is talking?" he thought immediately. He stepped backwards abruptly and into his house, shutting the door. The closing door made an undoor-like sound that left him in the foyer, frozen in thought about the doors and the sounds they routinely make, reasons to be otherwise, and all ramifications of this. He felt his chest vulnerably, sort of checking for his heart. He and his clothes were now completely dry. He again heard the totality of the rushing falls, the bubbling of the canal bog, the ringing pulse of the mushrooms. The fungi held him with 10,000 hands. The walls made a sound like a dip in temperature. The carpet made the sound of a red light in a cave. He stumbled into the adjacent dining room, and the room swallowed lightly, screwing up its courage. This was its big moment. The lord of the house was here. It made the sound of an insect noticing you. He was no longer wet, but felt around himself and was still unconvinced. He was still with the mushrooms. He had little context for that thought, but it felt true. He was suddenly aware of himself as a tiny, tiny speck of organic matter quivering in a complex mushroom simulation on the side of a rotting tree somewhere, where there was a bed of rotting trees in the Canadian forest to the north, where the mushrooms had their Niagara Falls Research and Iterative Simulations Lab.
RITSIM.
The mushrooms had a network of labs in the surrounding area, running different snow globe world fungal matter simulations with undifferentiated rhizome cultures in rotting trunks to see how the full takeover of a human-poisoned biome would proceed. He coughed, feeling sick from the sudden macro to microscopic shift. He put his hands up. Was he actually in an amniotic sac? His brain and the sensorium serviced and conscripted by a penetrating fungal web of mesh filaments? No, not conscripted. This was all for him. A feeling of total safety persisted. He felt menaced by supreme and otherworldly kindness on a scale that dwarfed him and swept him up with a hot, sandy wind. He felt sand in his teeth. He looked out the window to the now unsullied town. "You know what? This is better. And I'm gonna stop questioning it." And that's why he knows he's still in the house.
It, us, all.
And the mushrooms Super. Had him. Have him in a way so deeply that he was them now. It's him. The mushrooms. It's me. I'm them. It, us. All. Super. And the moistness at the edges of his clothes that he remembered from visiting the Oracle was just the first step to being moist all the time, where he no longer had to drink because he was the drink. He knew then that he was water in a jar made of fungus. In harmony with himself and all his various decisions, he proceeded to spend a little time turning himself inside out again. In the house, the old appliances and the shiny mid-century furniture relaxed a little, seeing that they were near the end of their shift for the day, and it looks like the boss was stopping early today too. he took out his chest and held it up to admire his heart beating in his chest still. His arms elongated and draped along the molding, and his nerves fluttered in the afternoon air. He was back in the toilet. As every room in the house converged and shifted, he unraveled himself because it was easy. Easier than holding it all together and bothering to doubt, pretending that it was strange and mysterious, that his fungal selves had decided he needed to see the neighborhood one more time, as it had existed, way back, before the poison leak was revealed. Even the toxic waste made sense now. It wasn't a disaster, it was an opportunity. The mushrooms knew that its old enemy was rearing its head, and the local community rose to observe its old traditions of maximal reality warping fecundity. The lord of the mushroom house sat back, put a glass of watery sludge from the rain gutter up to his lips and sighed. No one's ever gonna talk to me again, but I'm on my way to space. So one day, I'll tell my tale. There was a mirror before him. He looked into his own eyes.
He looked into his own eyes and started to tell the tale.
Once there was a love canal and a dream. A dream free of consequences.